Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and thanks to all of you for joining us today. We are releasing an important new report written by journalist and author David Sirota. It's called The Plot Against Pensions, the Pew-Arnold Campaign to Undermine America's Retirement Security and Leave Taxpayers with the Bill. If you haven't received a copy of David's report, please go to ourfuture.org/plot against pensions. That's ourfuture.org/plot against pensions. We at IAF have long worked on Social Security, challenging the idea that that system is in crisis and that we've advanced ideas for making Social Security more generous and more secure in its financing. But Social Security is just one leg of the famous three-legged stool of retirement security, which also includes private savings and pensions. We all know what the popping of the housing bubble and the recession did to private savings. This new report by David documents an active effort by the so-called charitable foundations, Pew Charitable Trusts and the Arnold Foundation, to undermine that third leg of retirement security, the private pension system, some of them operated by state and local governments. We're also pleased to be joined by economist Dean Baker, the founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and Kentucky Representative Jim Wayne, who saw firsthand what happens when the Pew-Arnold relationship moves into your state and can devastate public workers. So David Sirota, the author, is an economics journalist, TV and radio commentator, columnist, syndicated, and best-selling author. He's also worked at the House Appropriations Committee for the Center for American Progress, and this is not the first time we at IAF have also published his work. So let me hand it over to David Sirota. David?
Thank you. Thanks very much, Roger, and thanks everyone for being on this call. This report was done, as Roger said, for the Institute for America's Future. It was a report that looks at what is happening in specifically what has happened in seven states and what that template in those states suggests will be happening in many other states across the country as many other states debate pensions, what to do about pensions, pension shortfalls, and budgets. I'm going to go through some of the findings here, and I think it would be best to, because everyone has the report, I'm not going to say what you can already read in that report. I'll try to leave it open for questions. And I'm also going to leave obviously, the piece of this discussion about the specifics of how big the public pension so-called crisis is or isn't. That's actually part of the report. I'm going to leave that to Dean Baker, because that's one of his areas of expertise. But this report looked at the politics of pension reform, and I put reform in quotes. And it's clear that in the seven states outlined in this report and in many states throughout the country that the few charitable trusts and the Arnold Foundation, their partnership, is driving the debate in these states around pension reform. And what this report focuses on is the idea that the reforms being proposed are specific, they are ideological, and they do not honestly or fairly assess the entire budget pictures in states. In specific, what typically has been happening in states across the country is that Pew has been coming to states manufacturing the perception of crisis, ginning up the idea that what public pensions face in their shortfalls is a full-on crisis, and that crisis requires a response exclusively focused on cuts to guaranteed retirement income, as opposed to looking at the totality of state budgets and asking what can be done to deal with the shortfalls and what can be done to deal with spending priorities at the state level. One of the key findings of the report is a look using Pew's own numbers about what the pension shortfall really is versus how much states are spending on things like corporate subsidies and so-called tax expenditures. Pew has said that there is a $1.3 trillion pension and healthcare, retiree healthcare shortfall. That is a 30-year estimate, and that's one thing that's been missed, I think, in a lot of the discussion about pensions, is that many of these numbers, when you talk about pensions, are over 30 years. And so what the report does, one of the things the report does, is look at what that actually means on a year-to-year basis. $1.38 trillion is a $46 billion annual pension shortfall. That's for all the states. And that number alone has been used to say that states are facing an immediate crisis that requires, again, cuts to guaranteed pension income. Left out of the discussion in Pew's materials and in the Arnold Foundation's spending to promote these, and we can discuss the tactics of how these campaigns work, but in general, what is left out is the fact that states spend far more on corporate subsidies and tax expenditures, far more each year than that annual alleged pension shortfall. One example. I gave you the $46 billion numbers a year that Pew says that states face in totality. The New York Times, in its huge report on corporate subsidies only, was it 6 months ago, found that both states, counties, and cities are giving up more than $80 billion a year to companies. That's, again, in the form of tax expenditures and economic development subsidies. On top of that, the U.S. PERG put out a report, it was a year ago, about how much states lose to their own corporate tax loopholes that allow essentially offshore tax avoidance. They put that number at $40 billion a year. So essentially, you have Pew and Arnold going around the country saying a $46 billion a year pension shortfall requires cuts to guaranteed retirement income, essentially pleading poverty, saying that states don't have enough money to fund their pensions, even as states are spending up to $120 billion a year on essentially a collection of corporate tax subsidies and tax expenditures. That has been completely left out of the debate. Specifically, when Pew and Arnold meet with legislators and when they promote in public, in their public campaigns, what needs to be done about pensions, the entire spending side of the equation has been left out of their materials. They are pushing exclusively, or really almost exclusively, a cut guaranteed retirement benefit message. And what some might say ironic, others might say grotesque, is the fact that many of these shortfalls have been exacerbated by the fact that states have been not funding, not meeting their obligations annually to fund pensions. That is to say that in 4 years before the financial crisis, and certainly after the financial crisis, states have not been putting into their public pension funds what they have obligated themselves to put in as part of their negotiated agreements with public workers. They have used that money, and there's a big Rolling Stone magazine report out just this morning about this. They have used that money as sort of secret loans. They have taken that money to finance corporate tax cuts in the past, to finance corporate subsidies in the past. And then when the shortfalls have hit, they have cited the shortfalls of their own underfunding, of their own using that money for not to fund the pension. They've cited those shortfalls to say, well, now we must cut retiree guaranteed income, rather than saying maybe we should rein in the corporate subsidies that we used that money to pay for in the past, or those tax cuts that we used to pay for in the past. So all of this is detailed on a state-by-state level. What the report does, you'll see, it goes through different states where Pew and Arnold have played a formative role, looking at what those states are spending on those subsidies versus what their alleged pension shortfalls are, and then it looks at the politics of how Pew and Arnold have used their resources. And the way it basically works, I'll just conclude with just a template idea of how this is working in states, because this is going to the Arnold Foundation has already said that it is committed to expanding this model in states throughout the country. Arnold has already said that he spent $10 billion so far on this campaign, and they're prepared to spend more. Essentially, the way it usually works is that Pew comes in with its allegedly nonpartisan analysis, non-ideological analysis, meeting with state legislators to promote the idea of an imminent crisis with pensions. And Pew meets with legislators, puts out their well, I think their report is called the Widening Gap Report, talking about shortfalls. And then both Pew and Arnold then put together a package of proposals that are exclusively focused on cutting guaranteed retirement income rather than, this is the critical point, rather than raising public revenues to replenish the pension shortfalls that have been created. And then typically what happens is that the Arnold Foundation, because the Arnold Foundation is more overtly ideological and political than Pew, the Arnold Foundation has in many states funded public political campaigns for these proposals, with radio ads, through conservative think tanks. So they work essentially in tandem, and this model is going to be expanding. And typically, the last thing I'll say is that the proposals they put together are usually so-called cash balance proposals and or 401k-style proposals. And we can get into the differences of what those mean versus traditional defined benefit pension plans and how traditional defined benefit pension plans are actually end up costing the same or less, in many cases less, than the proposals being put forward. They put messages, well, this is going to save taxpayers money. And in many of the states documented in the report, actually the pension so-called reform that they've been pushing actually end up costing taxpayers more, because much of the money that is being proposed to be moved around ends up in the hands of hedge fund managers, ends up in the hands of financial managers who the new pension proposals propose to run the individualized accounts. So I'll stop there. Everybody has the report. And as I said, Dean Baker on this call can certainly speak to the idea of what the pension crisis is and isn't, and Representative Wayne can obviously talk about what this has meant in one specific state where Pew and Arnold were very active.
Okay, can people hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, I want to raise three points about...
This is Dean Baker.
Okay, I'm sorry, this is Dean Baker. Okay, yeah. Well, there's three points in reference to David's report and more general issue. First off, I would argue that Pew and Arnold have really promoted an atmosphere, unwarranted fear about pensions, and David began to get into that. I'll tell a little bit more. Secondly, it is important that people understand that these are benefits people work for. It's often talked about as though these are gifts, and people sometimes think they're too generous. They can talk about whether they're too generous or not, but in many cases, it's a contract. And for some reason, people seem to have a hard time understanding contracts with workers, or at least elected officials sometimes seem to. The last point is that, in many ways, I view the public sector pensions as a model of secure retirement. That, there's been some media coverage. Lawson posted a very nice piece on this a month or so back about how few workers have any sort of decent retirement income, and most public sector workers are better situated, and I consider that a good thing and something that we would want to emulate rather than trying to destroy the public sector. Okay, the first point, David again mentioned this $1.3 trillion liability, and this is really kind of a game in Washington to run around with big numbers that are meaningless to people, and I'm sorry to be disappointed anyone, but I won't have been known on this line to tell you what the size of the economy will be over the next 30 years. And my reason for saying that is getting a number that reflects liability over a 30-year period without placing that in the context is basically dishonest. Everyone at Pew, Arnold, knows how to do division. It's very simple to divide that liability over the years in which it's relevant, the 30-year period. And if you do that division, it's less than 0.3% of projected GDP over that period. I don't say it's trivial, but that probably doesn't scare people quite as much as, say, $1.3 trillion. So again, I just think it's really dishonest to just make you do that arithmetic, and they cannot tell anyone that the people who are hearing the $1.3 trillion have a context for that number. So deliberately reporting a number that most people will not understand is just not an honest thing to do in policy debate. I also point out that repeatedly talked about how the return assumptions in pensions are too high, that pensions should, instead of assuming 7 to 8% return, which is not what most do because you're nominal, they should instead assume a risk-free rate of return in the neighborhood of 4 to 5%, which then they point out for us would raise the liabilities as high as $4 trillion. What I point out, and I wrote the issue of returns very carefully, there can be issues that in fact there were issues of returns in the years of the stock market bubble in the 1990s and even within the last decade. The extent to which a pension can get a return depends on price-earnings ratios in the stock market first and foremost, because that's typically where 70% of their assets are invested. Unfortunately, few and Arnold were not yelling about excessive returns back in the 90s when some of us, in fact, were. Nor in the last decade when some of us here again raising that issue. The yelling about it now, in fact, it's inappropriate, and I've done some analysis of this papers on my website I could refer people to. In fact, I would say the returns assumed by the vast majority of pension funds are saying the vast majority, probably almost all of them, with any exceptions, but there may well be one out there, are saying very reasonable given current market valuations. The last point I will just make about that, if you look at the distribution of pension fund assets, most of them recently well thrown, the actual is usually considered 80% of threshold, look above that, if it's acceptable levels of funding, 100% obviously better, but 80% is considered reasonable in an outpatient crisis. Most pensions are close to that or above it. When we get the numbers for 2013, of course the stock market's gone up a lot over the course of the last year. Most funds use an average in four years, 5 years. That means 2013 is going to replace either 2008, 2009. A lot of those funds are going to show much better and look much better come next year than this year. We'll see if he was honest in their assessments. We had a report headline, Shrinking Gap, when they talked about the latest numbers, so I look forward to that. Professor Lippin contracts, out of audience, it's kind of evident, but we usually think it's very important to set the sanctity of contracts. I remember the lectures about this from the Obama administration when the AIG bonus became an issue in the months following the bailout that we had many top people at AIG that hundreds of thousands of dollars of bonuses, company that basically bankrupt as invested in the government bailout. And we had many people from the Obama administration said they regret that, but those are contracts and contracts are sacred. Well, I refer to Chicago now where the mayor, Rahm Emanuel, is saying that he's finding it inconvenient to pay their pension funds. And I'm saying this because Chicago, in contrast to Detroit, is a city with a very healthy economy, and I look at their pensions and their liabilities, their pension liabilities are roughly about 5/10 or 6/10 of a percent of their projected city domestic product over the next 3 decades. Again, not trivial, but for a city with a relatively healthy economy, that's certainly a bearable burden. And it's just quite striking that here that the mayor is prepared to say, well, I find it inconvenient to meet these contracts, so I'm going to look to avoid that. One last point on that, I didn't point out that workers work in it. There's a huge exaggeration in many cases of the generosity of pensions. This comes up in the context of Chicago, where the average city worker has a pension value from a city worker a bit over $30,000, maybe $32,000 or $33,000. Those workers don't have Social Security. Oftentimes, these are discussed, certainly Chicago's not being discussed, without making that point. So getting $30,000, you can argue whether that's too high or too low. In the context where it's a worker that, for the most part, you're not having a Social Security check on top of that, it probably doesn't sound that very, very generous. So certainly it's important to keep in mind, both that workers work for these who are contracted for, if you look at public sector workers in general, the number of studies we've done, so the Economic Policy Institute has done some, public sector workers, the total pay packages in general comparable with some of the low private sector pay packages when you adjust for age and education. They do get more in pensions, they get less in straight pay. The last point I want to make is we know we have a retirement crisis in the country. Private sector traditional defined benefit pension plans have largely disappeared. The hope, of course, is that 401ks will serve as a replacement. We got the data on that now. That they've not done that. Very few people are able to earn enough in the 401k to provide them any sort of decent retirement. We continue to see defined benefit pensions in the public sector. And to my mind, that's a good thing. And I remember when I first learned about this in grad school, it seemed a fairly simple concept. The basic story is that when you have a long-lived entity like a state and local government, they're relatively indifferent to the risk of the stock market. In other words, it doesn't matter a lot in the state of Wisconsin that the stock market might be down when I retire come 2025, whatever that might be. It doesn't matter because they're going to be around 2030, 2035, whatever, they're going to be around indefinitely. On the other hand, if I'm hitting my retirement age, I'm going to cash out money I have in a retirement account, and then there's a great deal to me that the stock market's down in 2025. So the point point here is that you transfer the risk to the party that can more easily bear it, in this case the government, and that's a mutually beneficial gain. So the government has to give something of great value to workers' security that has very little cost to the government. That's what we lose if we lose public sector pensions, the defined benefit pensions that we have. And rather than trying to eliminate them from the public sector, I think we should, in principle, want to extend them, find a way to find something like that in the agriculture in this regard to private sector workers. One last point that should be overlooked, and I can't let this explain to anyone's voters, but I think the important thing that public sector pensions do, some public sector pensions calculators that have been very prominent in investor activism. What I mean by that, they've been scrutinizing practices of corporations, going after excessive CEO pay and other set practices. That's something we would lose if we got rid of public sector pensions. So I think that's been a very important role. In fact, they provided a public service to all investors. That's something you should want all investors to do, but, I've got 401k, I can't use my money and monitor, the companies that they're considering to make sure that they do the right thing. I'd like to think that the 401k manager is doing that for me, but I know in fact they're not. Many public sector funds have been doing that job that benefits those funds, but in fact it benefits all shareholders and really the economy as a whole. There's no reason for us to want corporate executives to be able to rip off the companies, and we will lose that policing force if we got into public sector pension. So I would just argue that, we do have a good public sector pension system. Obviously, many problems, you'd be blind not to see them. They should be dealt with. In many cases where we've had abusive governors and mayors not making contributions that they should have made. But on the whole, the system is a very good system, and we really should look to build on it rather than tear it down.
Thank you, Dean. We'll now hear from Representative Jim Wayne, Kentucky State Legislator who has represented his Louisville House District since 1991. Jim?
Thank you, and I also want to thank David and Dean for their comments, and thanks so much for all of you for being on the call today. After watching the devastating effects of the Pew Arnold schemes that they've had in Kentucky, especially this past year, I felt compelled to warn other legislators in the country about the ramifications of letting Pew into your state. We tackled this situation in our legislative session earlier this year, and the Pew Alliance dropped to Kentucky with promises of reducing the unfunded liability of our pension system and then guaranteeing future retirement security. But in fact, our judgment is that, and I think this report shows it, the opposite is true. Our unfunded liability remains, and the independent actuaries predict that the plan will cost taxpayers an additional $55 million. And we also did not address many of the other areas, such as what we call the quasi-government employees, like the community mental health systems. And we've since we passed this so-called reform, one community mental health system in the metropolitan Louisville area has filed for bankruptcy, primarily because we did not properly address this issue. And now we risk, with this so-called reform, future generations in Kentucky, future generations of workers in Kentucky, they're going to be forced to live in poverty. And these are the folks who really are the cornerstone of my community in Louisville, but really the communities throughout our Commonwealth. That's the police officers and the firefighters and the social workers and so forth. These are my constituents and my friends, my neighbors. I see them in the grocery store. I see them when I go to the post office. And now they're robbed of their retirement because they're going to see in the future all these benefits that have been guaranteed for future workers, now they're going to be slashed. So I think what I can say is that Pew is very good at politics, and that's how they really gained access to our legislative leaders and to our governor to influence Kentucky and its reforms. But Pew is really awful when it comes to really policy that focuses on the common good. So I'm just encouraging folks and other legislators, especially in executives in other states, to not let Pew and Arnold convince you to pass harmful reforms as they did here in Kentucky that's going to have long-lasting consequences in your states. So again, I want to thank David and Dean for the excellent work that they're doing.
Thank you, Jim. Operator, now we can open up for questions.
And we'll take our first question from Hazel Bradford with Pensions and Investments. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. I have lots and lots and lots of questions. I don't even know where to begin. But one of them is, let's just talk about the Pew and Arnold partnership. Are they saying, are they doing and saying and believing in the same thing?
This is David Sirota. I don't like to speculate on necessarily what's in people's minds and what they're thinking. What I can say is this, they are working in tandem on, I mean, it's the campaign that they're waging is not two separate campaigns, it's one and the same, and I think what's revealing is that in their materials, both in when they had their informal partnership starting in 2011, and then obviously when they started issuing joint reports and making their partnership official in 2012, what I think is revealing is that the set of solutions that they propose to the so-called crisis are similar, if not identical, to each other, and they are identical in how they focus on cuts to guaranteed retirement income rather than replenishing shortfalls with new public revenues or recovered public revenues. You would think if they weren't working together off the same script that Pew, for instance, if it was non-ideological, non-partisan and objective, it would look at the fact that states are spending up to $120 billion a year on corporate subsidies and tax expenditures, and when then identifying a $46 billion a year total pension shortfall, that a non-ideological objective group would say, well, part of the solution has to be raising some public revenues, reducing the amount that we're spending on these subsidies. But both with Arnold and with Pew, that's essentially left off the policy table.
But Pew has looked at the corporate tax expenditures and subsidies, correct?
Well, a separate branch of Pew has put out, what was it, 2 years ago, put out a report, not even critical of corporate subsidies, but of saying that there needs to be at least more transparency in the subsidies. And I think that's referenced in that report. And I think what's going on here, and I don't want to speculate too much about how Pew operates, but Pew is such a large entity that there's certainly the possibility that the left hand doesn't talk to the right hand, or more specifically that the specific Pew retirement focused branch of its operation, which has forged its partnership with Arnold, is entirely separate from the part of the larger Pew Charitable Trust that is dealing with that put out that report on tax transparency.
Mr. Wayne, can you hear me?
Well, we got some sirens in the background. That must be
a little extra drama. Yes.
They're coming to get us, right?
They were listening. Well, can you tell me about your experience up close and personal as far as what you thought they were offering and what you got?
Well, I think I'm on both of the committees that handle the legislation, both the addressing the fiscal issue and then addressing the policy issue. In both cases, what happened was that they were able to convince the legislative leaders that they should be the chief consultant to a task force that met for a year during 2012, and then that task force presented its recommendations to the legislature. The understanding was that the Pew proposals would be compromised to make sure that there would not be what we call a hybrid system, which would include a 401k. And what happened was, once the legislative process started in January, the legislative leaders, both in the Republican-controlled Senate and the Democratic House, as well as the Democratic governor, all adopted the Pew recommendations and ignored and shut out the advocates for a more balanced approach to this. So, and then, you know, I recall what the Speaker said, who he was the sponsor of the bill, when he finished passing the bill with a very flowery speech on how this was going to protect our future pensioners and so forth. I went up to congratulate him because I argued vehemently on the House floor, debated him on the issue on the other side. I went up to congratulate him, as I always do when my opponent wins. And he said, you know, I was really sorry I had to do that to them. So it was like part of him knew that this was not the right approach. But there was such a momentum at that stage to get something done quickly. There was a panic situation created, and Pew won the day.
And we'll take our next question from the line of Randy Creeble with Social World. Go ahead, your line is open.
Well, I guess I have an observation and then the actual question. And my observation is that I wrote my first story about a state pension plan being in imminent danger of failure in 1993. And I wrote the most recent one 2 days ago. So it's not really a new whatever, but it's not new. But my question is the line that we're hearing here is that the young public employees don't really want a pension plan. They want the 401k, that they want that portability, which makes me wonder which is the chicken and which is the egg. In other words, if a pension plan was part of it and they felt like they could work be public employees for a long time if they would prefer that, or if people really do like to jump around in their employment more.
Dean, you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. You know, it is a tough chicken egg question. I mean, the reality is most people don't have the sort of job security that we might have looked back at 30, 40 years ago where someone could actually envision starting a job in their 20s and working at it until they retire. That's really become very much an exception. So it is, ideal, I think, to have some sort of portable system, and you could do that. I mean, you could have a portable system that's not 401k, and, you know, people have talked about this. I've worked with Teresa Gilarducci and some others to talk about having some sort of defined benefit type system that is administered centrally, whether it be through the federal government, through the state government. You could construct something like that. I would consider that an ideal. I think workers do value security. I don't think there's any doubt about it. So given the choice of having some sort of guaranteed retirement income as opposed to 401k where you end up with, you know, whatever, you know, you're lucky or unlucky, you pay a lot in fees, I don't think there's any doubt people prefer, you know, a guaranteed income. But on the other hand, you know, the reality is, of course, people can't count often by not their choice, you know, by their employer's choice. They can't kind of stay at the same job. So ideally, you know, I would want to see us accommodate that reality that workers are going to have multiple employers through their lives, and that means some sort of portable pension, but that can have a guaranteed benefit, a defined benefit. It does not have to be a 401k. Under the current system, obviously, all that's there is a 401k type benefit.
This is Roger Hickey. Let me just jump in and note that there's a modus operandi here which focuses not on what the workers want, but on a ginned up crisis, a perception of crisis, similar to what right-wing organizations are doing around Social Security, and then a set of solutions that have not worked out well, as you've heard from in Kentucky. So this unprecedented activism on the part of a charitable foundation working with a more right-wing foundation, it has a set of prescriptions that are not at all designed to accommodate workers. They are designed to come in and get rid of the public pension system in that state or locality. It's really quite amazing conservative activism on the part of the Pew Charitable Trust.
And we'll take our next question from Chris Tobe with the Wall Street Journal. Go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, this is Chris Tobe. I write a Wall Street Journal Marketplace column, and I'm a good friend of Jim Wayne's here in Kentucky. I've written a lot about Kentucky. I've heard that Arnold funded the entire, like $6 million, almost the entire budget for the Pew political initiative. Were you all able to confirm that? Arnold funded like over $6 million.
Yeah, I can address that. Here's what I found in my research. The Arnold Foundation has been, I'm going to try to mute their phone if you can. The Arnold Foundation has been on record saying it has spent up to $10 million on its pension advocacy work. I tried to find out exactly how much, if anything, and I assumed it was something, that the Arnold Foundation has given directly to Pew. And in the report, you'll see that Pew made a tactical shift in the way it operates in, I believe it's in the report, I think it's 2005, in which they opened themselves up to partnerships with organizations and individuals who have substantial resources. And before that, they hadn't done that. They were kind of a freestanding foundation. So in 2005, they made this tactical shift. And so it would stand to reason that one thing that's driving their political and ideological advocacy on pensions is the possibility that John Arnold, a very politically active billionaire, came to them and said, "Look, I'm going to give you money to essentially get your brand, your nonpartisan brand, to shroud my ideology in the veneer of pragmatic, objective research, essentially in the veneer of Pew's brand." I was unable to find an exact number because I wasn't able to get access to the Arnold Foundation's IRS form that is supposed to document what monies a 501c3 spends. The way I understand it is a 501c3 doesn't have to disclose its donors, but it has to disclose its expenditures. And up to at the point that I was finished the report, the Arnold Foundation had not released that form for 2012, which of course is the year when the Pew Arnold Partnership became an official partnership, issuing joint reports and the like. However, that's not to say that they won't publicly, kind of anecdotally confirm it. I just wasn't able to get it documented on paper.
Yeah, I also heard they did some for Brookings too. Have you heard that? Yes, that Arnold gave some Brookings some money for.
I have heard that as well. I mean, but the only caution I would have for you on that is that the Arnold Foundation isn't only about pensions. They do some other stuff as well. So I wasn't able to document if the money they've given to other foundations was pension specific. I mean, obviously their work with Pew is entirely pension specific.
And we'll go next to the line of Maeve Conman with KGNU. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hi. It says in the report that Pew has begun legislative briefings in states like Pennsylvania and Colorado. David, could you maybe expand on that? What has been happening in Colorado and who has been involved in these briefings?
Yeah, what has been documented, I believe, that Pew typically comes to states and does meetings with city clubs, with chambers of commerce, with legislators. There was a report, and I can offline, I can send it to you. There was a report. Don't quote me on this, because I think it was with the Denver City Club, with Press Club, the Pew was here recently in Colorado. I can get you that if you email me. I'll get you. So don't quote me on it. Was the City Club? It was one of those civic organizations. And there's certainly been in my research on this have heard from officials in organized labor that Pew has been doing legislative briefings with legislators in advance of the upcoming legislative session here for next year.
And we'll take a follow-up question from Hazel Bradford with Pension Investments. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Let's get back to the original points you made as far as the pension shortfalls. There are pension shortfalls, but they're long-term problems. And then the tax, corporate tax subsidies and expenditures. Is there some way, are you working to get money from there to address the shortfalls?
working to, I'm only speaking as the researcher on this project. What I can say in response to that, and obviously anybody else chime in, very, very briefly, what I can say is that if we're going to have an honest discussion about state budgets, because that's really what we're talking about here. Pension shortfalls are just part of state budgets. If we're going to have an honest discussion about state budgets, then we need to look at the entirety of state budgets. And Pew and Arnold, their work is effectively trying to create a political debate where only a slice of total state budgets are evaluated for the purposes of cutting benefits rather than for the purposes of actually balancing budgets over the long haul. And the political purpose that serves is the fact that the beneficiaries of massive corporate subsidies and tax expenditures happen to be some of the most politically powerful actors in states, and the entities that donate the most amount of campaign contributions to the legislators and to the politicians who ultimately enact these things. And it's not a coincidence that big business, chambers of commerce, et cetera, in states, are supportive of exactly what Pew and Arnold are doing, because what Pew and Arnold are doing is saying we can balance the budget effectively on the backs of retirees by cutting their guaranteed income, and that effectively preserves the subsidies that continue to go out the door to those campaign contributors.
Can I follow up on that? This is Representative Jim Wayne.
Sure.
I think in Kentucky it's real interesting that at the same time the task force was set up to study the pension issue, and Pew was at the table during those discussions during 2012. That same year, the governor established a Blue Ribbon Commission on Tax Reform, and I was able to serve on that commission. That commission produced a document showing that, and this was different ideologies, left to right, were on that commission. They produced a document that showed that we have a system that is inadequate, that it is not fair because the wealthy folks are paying about 3 to 4% of their total income in state and local taxes, whereas the middle class and the working poor pay up to 11% of what they earn in state and local taxes. So it concluded our tax system is inadequate, it was not fair, and it was not buoyant. It was not flexible as economies changed. So it was too dependent on certain types of taxes over others. All that report went to the governor because that would have raised about $650 million more of our $9.2 billion annual budget. That would have addressed the pension issue. Instead, what the governor did was, once the both reports landed on his table, he took the Pew report, in essence, which is what was adopted. He took that and basically squandered what I think was a great opportunity to address the larger issue that most states have, and that is that our state revenue systems are out of date. They don't correspond to the current way the economies are running. They're unjust and they're inadequate. So that's not unique to Kentucky, but I think we serve as an example for other states of how not to do it.
And we'll now go back to Roger Hickey for any closing remarks. Please go ahead.
I want to thank everybody who spoke and all of you on the line here. You can get the research report at our website, and we will send you a press release. I do want to emphasize the fairly unprecedented activism that on the part of Pew and Arnold in this foundation sector. Most foundations commission reports. Most foundations try to do analysis, perhaps support organizations that are working at the grassroots. This is a set of foundations that are going to legislators and lobbying them with their prepackaged solutions. We thought it was important to shine a spotlight on this activity, in hopes that the discussion of the pension issue will be fair and balanced here and all over the country. So thank you very much for joining us, and feel free to call if you have follow-up questions.